are listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
Across the table, we've got Forrest Robinson.
Who can it be, Mike?
And last but not least, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Sick,
yeah.
All right, this is going to be a really wacky show because, amongst other things...
The drugs have kicked in.
It's the vitamin water.
We don't have any guests that we have to be good for. Right. And at the same time, we're also doing a test run on a live stream of the Audio Nowcast.
So we're guestless, huh?
Yeah. We're guestless.
I'm not sure if I'm fulfilled.
But so everybody behave, because we are live across this nation to both listeners on the other side.
All right. Go Texas! Yeah!
So let's just start right into it. Scott, you were over at the Game Developers Conference.
I was.
And why don't you give us a little update on the happenings over at the Game Developers Conference, specifically in the audio, because it seems like gaming audio is about the only place where people have jobs.
It's interesting. I think that the attendance in audio was down, but, it was over $1,000 for the ticket.
Wow.
So that doesn't, it's like, I think it's $1,400 to attend.
Yeah.
And in this economy, companies would send one or two people rather than normal five, six, seven. A lot of freelancers out there looking for work, looking to get connections. I think that the game industry is actually doing well. There's a lot of layoffs in the game industry, but I find that the layoffs are more support-based rather than production-based. So I haven't heard of less projects being done. This is really weird. Less projects being done. I think the game industry is maturing beyond college, where they made tons of money. They built these giant campuses, and
are people cautious? Is that the
I think that they're looking at the new business model. I think the question becomes the game companies. I mean, there's some of these campuses, are as big as Warner Brothers. I mean, EA in Canada's huge. So, they have lakes. They got multiple Starbucks restaurants in the facilities. It's huge. So what's happening? I think people are going, in this economy, do we need all of that?
Right.
As a mature company that's actually trying to make a profit, what do they need to do? But gaming's are so well. I mean, the gaming industry is healthy. People are using games as much, maybe I'd say even more than film, because you can take the game, buy it, keep playing it, bring the family, especially the stuff on Wii. Everyone goes in, and they get a lot out of each game. So I think that stress relief, the game industry at the moment seems to be weathering through the economic storm.
Right.
I think GDC, there was still a lot of people. It's two full convention centers of people. So there's thousands and thousands of people coming there.
Now, let me ask you, tool-wise, is there any big breakthrough on the tools?
I think what's happened is, in the past, everybody had their own proprietary engines.
Right.
What this basically means is Nuendo and Pro Tools, everybody invented their own digital workstation. So every time there needed to be an update, it was up to your tech department and your dev department to create those tool sets. That could be very difficult, especially if you say, hey, can we incorporate VST plugins? Can we do this? Can we do that? And they're like, make a list, and hopefully in a couple of years we'll get there.
Right.
Now what's happening is there's middleware solutions. So if you are a third-party company, basically not Microsoft and not Sony, but make a product that works on all the platforms, middleware will make it where when you develop your product on one product, it will port easily to the other products. So if you, let's say, build it on the Xbox, you can port it to PS3, to Wii, and to other formats relatively easier.
Wow.
As well as, the big one out there right now that seems to come from behind, and that is Audio Kinetics has a company called the Weiss Engine, WWISE. And they seem to be they're talking to all the plug-in companies. I'm not sure what's public yet, but now all of a sudden you can have multiple plugins within the game that you can program. So you can have convolution reverb, you can have EQs, you can have compressors. So now all of a sudden you just need to write the algorithms of how you're going to use them, basically automation. Saying when I'm coming up close.
So you can have it built into the engine itself.
Yes, yeah, so the mix is based on radius control physics models, many, many different attributes. It could be that when I start losing, duck the music or duck the sound effects, kick up the music, get rid of the dialogue or pitch down the dialogue when all of a sudden I'm hit and you hear the words like,
Yeah, you know what's cool about that is the fact is you can mimic real-world physics in audio. Like if you're in a war game and an explosion happens nearby, just like in the real world where you'd blow, you know, you'd get a little bit of over-compressed audio and you'd blow like you're hearing,
yeah.
you could probably – do that same thing now with it.
That's good. Blow your hearing.
No.
I think the thing is,
you can simulate that.
I think the ability to stimulate physics exists now, and they've got that. They're finessing it quite a bit. The problem is,
I think you meant simulate physics.
What did I say?
You said stimulate physics.
Stimulate.
Wow. Boy, did I like physics.
It's been a while since I studied physics. But I don't remember getting stimulated.
And the simulation.
Thank you.
And the AI of the physics models. I think what happens, though, it doesn't help emotionally with gameplay. So one of the things that that I'm trying to do is to come up with formulas and algorithms to create emotional content, emotional arcs, which is what I think an audience responds to more unless you're doing 100% simulation.
Were you did you get to see that demo of that live technology where basically the servers store all the gameplay and it's streamed live via the internet to you and you can play games but not actually have to have the program? The program's in a server somewhere.
Yeah.
And they got all these big time developers on board on that, but they don't obviously have any, they don't have Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo because that's totally going to kill the console war. And for the developers, I know why they want to jump in on that because if it gets delivered over the internet, you don't have to worry about
it. So much easier.
I think mobile technology, I heard little whispers that they were saying that the iPhone generation technology might surpass the DSD. And the PSP, or the DS and the PSP. I think mobile technology is technology on demand, game-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's cute little bouncy things.
Yeah.
People like to be entertained while they're bored. So I think that's a huge market.
Well, this was like playing BioShock over, big games and the demo was pretty impressive for what I understood.
Yeah, I know.
But, I just think that's a trend that's definitely
It's definitely coming because all it takes, if you can have intelligent character objects and models running on the whatever the mobile device is, and then all the internet has to do is basically control them.
Right.
I mean, there's still going to always be some download of something cool and sizable that has to come down for the game to look really good. But that's definitely the way things are going because internet's only getting faster, and it's really easy from the server end now to drive. You know, you could drive 100 million people playing the game simultaneously now pretty easily server farms.
Weiss came out with something which was pretty wild, which I said to them, that's great. You should come up with a Pro Tools plugin for it. What they do is they take a sound and break it into two components, a pitched component and a noise component. So let's say you hit a bell, and what you do is the actual hit to it is a percussive noise element. They keep that extracted out. Then they take the tone harmonic content and separate that. Now they can pitch it and control it, but still have the noise element when it comes back together. So you can start pitching things around, like hitting metal. Boom, 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 boom. It's only one sample, and what they do is they take a snapshot of it. You can make it longer, you can make it shorter, you can pitch it down.
So does the transient at the beginning of the sound stay the
same? Exactly.
So it sounds
real?
Because it
takes anything that's noise-based.
It doesn't pitch that.
It doesn't pitch that. So what happens is when it's combined, you can use that sound. I mean, it kind of wild.
Any- well, that's really cool because with any kind of workstation, when you pitch stuff, the thing that sounds the most not real is the transient at the beginning of the
exactly.
sound.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what it does is separates it out and allows you to then change the pitch and randomize it. So theoretically, you can have an infinite amount of possibilities.
Infinite possibilities.
That's pretty cool.
Between filtering and pitching, and the pitching sounds fantastic because it's all tonal. Mm. And it could be complex. It can even be a footstep.
So it doesn't get artifacty when you start pitching.
Not at all.
Because it doesn't try to pitch noise. It just tries to pitch tone.
It keeps the fundamentals.
That's pretty cool.
And I went,
cool.
Okay, this is great for Weiss, but have you ever thought of making this into a commercial musical plugin?
Yeah, except they're making $100 billion with it. Or they will.
Well, you think of like xylophones and drums and all that kinds of stuff. So you can also have the initial hit, and you can actually tune the tonal part of your drum.
Without it sounding too artificial?
Right, exactly, because the noise is extracted out.
Right.
So they're just starting this little, and it comes free with the program.
With what program? Mention one more time.
Weiss. It's the company's Audio Kinetics out of Montreal.
That's amazing.
And there have been resynthesizer systems that have done stuff like that for music over the years, and they've always cost $1 zillion and taken a long time to process, and I'm sure this thing
will now run on a laptop. In an Xbox or a PS3.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's not – and you got to remember, it's not an audio-only engine. It's got to take a very, very small CPU footprint because really what everything's happening is the graphics. I mean, that's – graphics is God in games. Sorry, audio guys.
So it was a pretty, even though it wasn't a very big show as what they've had before, it was pretty successful.
It was. I mean, they have a lot of master classes going on. There's a lot of great discussions, postmortems of people that did games, what they found, the technology they used. You know, the water cooler talk is probably the most valuable.
Right.
You know, you eat probably 5-6 meals a day.
Wow.
Any reason to go get a coffee, to go, you know. It's like breakfast, post-breakfast, pre-lunch, lunch, post-lunch, pre-dinner, dinner,
oh,
post-dinner, man. Drinks.
And
you're just like, hey, do you want to go for the, you know.
Now, let me, you know, you brought up something, and I'm totally just going to change course. You know, course here just a little bit, but you were talking about how there's a lot of freelancers out there looking for work. Are game companies not hiring like they used to be? Is it basically a trimming down?
No. I think there's huge hiring. Well, I don't know how much they're hiring right now.
Right.
But I don't believe there's a lot of firing unless the studios are closing down. I think it's like many companies. If you're low hanging fruit and even in the good times, you weren't sure if you were hanging on.
Right.
This situation we're going in, this financial atmosphere that we're in.
Catastrophe? Meltdown?
Well, it's different for different industries. That's why, you know, in gaming, you know, there's big numbers being sold.
Right.
But what I think is happening is either you're doing well or you're not. And if you're not, you're out. So there's a lot of companies. Midway went down. THQ's been having a harder time. They're having to reorganize themselves. If you're not healthy and you don't have good product out there, it could be brutal. But if you are – and people look at EA and they've had cutbacks, but they've been huge.
Right.
And I'm not really sure how much they're cutting back or they're now maturing as a company to go, do we need all of this?
You mean like it could basically be fat trimming?
Yeah, I mean it's like studios. It's like how many guys have like – you know, huge, made tons of money on albums. They buy the mansion. They build the studio. It's out of control. And then the other albums didn't maybe do as well, or they're doing just as okay. And then they realize, well, we want to stop spending money on all the gear, and we actually want to invest money, put it in, build other, you know, buy other companies, and invest in a business. Then they start going, well, maybe we can do without that, and maybe we could do without that. You know, I think it's just watching your costs.
I just had a friend who got laid off. I have another friend who – his contract didn't get renewed, and it's just getting really
in the gaming world.
No, this is in post production. I'm just seeing a lot of people out there looking for jobs, especially in post. And I know they're not shooting as much, and there's just lot of people looking for work. I don't know. I'm just a little concerned. And
but we have to understand why, and I think that with our listeners, it is important to understand what's happening. The post production world has nothing, in some ways, to do with the recession. What has to happen is it has to do with two strikes. You had the writer's strike and the actor strike. So Hollywood stopped making product because nobody wants to be in the middle of making a movie and then have your actors walk off the set.
But you know what? That's on the film. But I'm talking about commercials, and I'm talking about like reality TV, which wasn't even affected by the strike at all. And they literally are. You know, people are getting fired left and right, or contracts
ad revenues are down.
Well, yeah. Commercials.
But it's crazy. If I was coming out of a school right now, I mean, the prospects for getting a job in audio, it just seems to me that audio as a profession is really under assault, because you get a lot of these old timers. And when I mean old timers, I mean guys that are maybe have been into it maybe 10, 15 years, you know, the crossover. A lot of companies are getting rid of those guys and hiring the, you know, the intern that's going to come in for $10, $15, $20 an hour.
It depends, I think, which playground you're playing, to be honest.
Post-production, but TV.
Even the TV stuff, though, is that I think they have a budget they want to get. The TV industry is tied to marketing revenue and commercials. And when you put it all together,
right. If
you want to know, because we're in the commercial business, too, and when our company asks, you know, what do we forecast this year in the commercial business – it's really simple. Look at Wall Street. When the companies make money, they spend money in advertising. When they don't, the advertising dollars stop really quick.
Right.
So that means they're advertising less. TV depends on the advertising dollar, different than cable.
Right.
So all of a sudden, if there's less advertising dollar, they have less money to spend on production.
You should look at the industries that advertise the most on television. Mm. Yeah. Pharmaceuticals and cars, and one of them is gone.
No, that's true. But even like music, I mean, I'm just amazed at – I was reading an article in one of the magazines that was talking about, you know, different ways to make money with your music, and one was library music. But there's just a ton of libraries out there now. I mean, yeah. I've never seen it so – inundated with just commercial library music.
Yeah,
it's all good stuff.
Some of it is, yeah.
No, I would argue a lot of it's terrible,
Let me, so
there's way more stuff than there should be. I mean, there's a lot of junk.
You know what?
There.
You're absolutely right. It's not all good stuff.
It's all good enough
I'm seeing more good stuff, because there used to be a time where library music was library music, you know.
No, there's definitely good stuff, but that's something that we've actually talked about before, is that there are a huge number of libraries out there, but a lot of them are pretty junky. And a lot of times you have to listen through 50 lousy cues to get to one good one.
But unfortunately, the people that are doing the –
they don't know the difference. who are buying it. Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Yeah, but again, I mean, if you go to McDonald's audience,
right?
What's the use of giving them filet
right.
meal?
If they can't appreciate it.
They don't, yeah, exactly. And quite frankly, if they're going to just gobble it down after, you know, they want to rush in and get a cheeseburger and eat in their car on the way home, they don't want to have like a 5-course meal in their car. They're like, I don't want it. I just want to stop my hunger. And I mean, I'm using this as a stupid comparison, but
it's not that stupid.
But you know, if you look at TV, and again, we were talking about different playgrounds to play in.
Right.
One of the things that's interesting right now, and it kind of blew my mind, was HBO was doing a miniseries called Pacific, which a lot of my buddies and my company is doing.
Right.
Everybody on the show are Oscar winners. I mean, they're using – and they're paying the rate. So what's happening is, you know, you got Mike Minkler, you got Tom Belford. Belford did Titanic, did Star Wars. Minkler did Dreamgirls and, I mean, just on and on, Chicago. They're paying top dollar. So I think what's happening is high-end cable, the Showtimes, the HBOs – they are high-quality providers, and they are looking for the best product. I mean, look, everybody wants to get as cheap as they can get it.
Right.
But other than that, they're looking for the high-quality people. I think there are reality shows, and there are certain types of shows that they just want it cheap.
Those HBOs and Showtimes, they're definitely a small sliver of the market compared to all the content that's
being
done.
But look at Sci-Fi Channel. No, absolutely. But if you look at Sci-Fi Channel, the stuff they've been doing, Battlestar Galactica series.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is, it's not just one or two shows. You can break up TV into multiple sects. And you can sit there and say, there is a group that are the high quality. I guess what I'm saying is, there's a lot of work for everybody at different levels.
Where?
you got to play the game. You got to engage.
Yeah, that's one saying.
You do. You got to get the confidence. You got to hang. You got to search these people out. I mean, it's...
No, that I understand, and I just see people, like I said, I'm only going from the personal stories of people that I know that are out there pounding the pavement trying to get.
What's difficult is there's a lot of people, and if you're low-hanging fruit means either trying to get in the business or you've been in the business but you haven't worked that much.
Right.
My heart goes out to you.
Yeah.
It's brutal because if you haven't worked that much, you may not be working at all right now. It might be dead in the water.
Or even if you have worked that much, if you've been pigeonholed into a really specific job, let's say you've just done laybacks for DVD re-releases of 70s TV shows, that used to be.
I've seen a lot of people rising through the ranks of all ages, young, old, in the middle. What my recommendation, anyone who wants to get post, is you've got to surround yourself by the people that are working in the areas that you want to work in. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do HBO, if you want to do movies, if you want to do Battlestar, find out who the people are. Get in with the teams. Get the credits going. Get the confidence of the crews. Get involved. It may take you several years of lunches and schmoozing and surrounding. And it's a bit of a game of chess.
Right.
Because like for me, like I've met with different directors that are young in their careers.
Right.
If you find somebody, who you go, wow, this guy is amazing. I just met a man today, a director who I was blown away by his reel. And this is his first movie he's going to do. I want to be his guy because I feel that what I saw visually and artistically, he has a future. And I would love to ride with him through that future and create a partnership. So that's what you have to do. You have to find those people that you invest in and they invest in you. And, you know, you only need, three or four clients, right, and then you got a career. On TV, you need one.
I'm going to get you my demo so that I can ride with you on your ride. The other guy's career. No, it just seems like it's a really scary time to be out there looking for work. But you're right. You know, I mean, they obviously, the work is out there because visual medium is all around us. You're only seeing more and more broadcasts.
Yeah,
it's not like you're seeing less
away.
And less.
And whether it's records or post,
yeah,
the reality is, in this town, and probably other entertainment sectors of Nashville and New York, there's always more people than there is work.
Right.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's only those people that persevere. Look, I came from Arizona. My parents did draperies.
Yeah.
So I knew nobody in this town. And if you got to come in, if you come in saying, hey, I'm here and I'm 6 months and I'm relatively talented and everybody see me and nobody sees you and you go, screw this, I'm leaving. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have the ability to persevere and work it and invest 2 to 3 years.
Right.
And then, you've got a much stronger possibility. I've seen a lot of people do it. Still do it.
Sure. What about, let me ask you, Rob.
Yes.
And Bobby, too. In music libraries. Good time to get into music libraries? Not so good of a time to get into music libraries?
If you're really good, it's always a good time to get into anything. If you're not so good at what you do. Well, seriously.
No, it is not.
This town is hungry for talent. And by this town, I mean planet Earth.
Right.
Anybody who needs music. I mean, if you're good at what you do, you're going to be discovered. You just have to, like Martin said, and I've pointed out before, it's one of the best things he ever said here, is you got to show up for the gig. You got to do what you're good at,
right,
and do it well, and you will get discovered unless you're incredibly difficult to work with. There's tons of content being made out there in every kind of medium, and if you're really good at what you do, you're going to get discovered and you're going to get to do it.
But you said something very good. You got to show up to the party.
Absolutely. That's the most important thing.
Because I see people go, I want to do a movie, and I live in New York or live in, I don't know, anywhere but the centers.
Right.
And you go,
yeah, it's not going to work.
You got to come here.
The other thing is, none of us are beginners at our careers, and we all have been playing. Okay, how about I put it this way? None of us are young.
No.
None of us are beginners. We all have established careers, but that doesn't mean that we don't have to be just as hungry as we were when we were 20.
Oh, actually,
absolutely.
Hungry,
absolutely.
I find, anyway, at this age, dare I say, but at 48, I'm 48 years old, I have to hustle actually more.
Wow, 48?
Yeah, sorry. Can you believe it? Don't look at it.
Is that like in cat years, or are you actually 48?
No, that's actually
that's amazing.
In trees, lines on the tree here.
You've
actually, I'm the oldest one here. Am I the oldest one?
No, I'm 48 too.
You 48?
Yeah.
And you?
24.
Okay.
The thing is, at any age, it's hard. There is definitely this illusion out there that only young people can be creative and cool, and obviously it's ridiculous. I mean, I had that whole illusion shattered for me. The most visible way was when, like, I'm trying to think who the young artists were, but, like, there were all these, like, 16-year-old girls singing, and they're doing all this young, edgy music a few years back. I'm just blanking on names because I am old. But, you know, these – young acts are all being produced by 50-year-olds.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no one's willing to acknowledge that, or people don't want to acknowledge that. The experience and the age and all that stuff actually does matter.
Well, look at all the great producers out there. Look at, like, Joe Ciccarelli, man. That guy can produce.
Yeah, and age has nothing to do with it. You know what, though? I dealt with an artist who had some really kind of crazy people around them that used to tell me that I would be too old to work with a young artist. They had no idea, like, who was actually making the records they loved and all this kind of stuff. And they were just coming from a position of ignorance. But it just really made me realize the way people think. And as a creative person in the industry, you have to realize that none of that stuff matters.
Right.
If you're smart and creative and easy enough to deal with, you can have a career into your 70s. You really can.
But the thing is, it's hard to get in and it's harder to stay in.
It's harder to get in and what?
It's hard to get in and harder to stay in.
Well, I think it's harder to stay in because people get complacent and they think it's always going to be this way once they're in. And you just have to realize there is no day you shouldn't show up hungry.
Yeah. You know what?
I agree with that.
That's so true. Complacency can definitely kill your career. And that's why, you know, for me, my own story is I keep up with technology. I'm always trying to push the envelope. I'm always getting the latest, you know, computer and want to make sure I'm up on software because I've never found that an investment in technology has ever failed me, except the mini DJ. But, but seriously, it's always taken me to another level and another, you know, and if you know the tools, and especially in audio nowadays, I hate to say it, but a lot of times it's the latest tools, you know, if you know the latest tools, you know, you're marketable still. And you've
got to know your tools well enough that you don't have to think about them while you're using them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like as a classical pianist, you can never look at your hands while you're playing. You got to look at the music. And the same thing's true with any tool you use.
And I think that's a really good reason, some really good career advice for people. And I'm finding this out myself, actually, since I've even started this podcast, is if you were raised on a digital, start looking at analog. Start looking at all the analog gear. Start looking at analog compressors. Start looking at all that because that is an understanding, a knowledge of your analog is going to help your bottom line. It really is because you're going to be going up against people who know all the same stuff digital.
If you can get access to it, though.
Yeah. Well, even if you understand how to use it, because then you can apply those same techniques and technologies in your DAWs, in your digital audio workstations. But a lot of people don't know how to think analog. And Bobby has a big old grin right now.
I was working with NDRE several years ago. And at that particular time, this is the early, you know, like 2000, between 2000 and 2002, I want to be choosing my words carefully here. And I don't want to mention any names, but a couple producers, I was very surprised to hear, like, they're still using analog console 2-inch reel to reel, which to me is like, there is no comparison in that sound to me with bass, drums, vocals. Yeah. And I was surprised to hear, and it wasn't like they said anything bad, but two very experienced notice producers saying, yeah, well, I don't really mess around. I don't understand that digital, that Pro Tool stuff. I know these young guys, you know, they doing all, and I'm sitting up here thinking, you know, and actually I said to both of them, I said, do you not realize that, like, in the digital age, like, these young guys you're talking about, that you're sort of putting yourself a little bit beneath, they would give their limbs to try to learn at least an inkling of what you're doing with analog.
Right.
That's why all these, I mean, in my humble opinion, these fancy schmancy plugins are made to merely imitate.
That's why they're called virtual.
Simple, right. Yeah. Dude.
Right.
And I was shocked. But I'm thinking, yeah, I strongly agree.
Well,
like,
just
I want to learn them.
Just a simple concept like sidechaining. You know, that's something that's directly from the analog world that you can totally apply in the digital world. And not a lot of people know how to do it properly. Not a lot of people know how to sidechain and the benefits are. And then if you're like a analog, you know, Wunderkin, like Bobby over here. You know,
Wunderkin.
You could do side chaining, and you can do even way cooler stuff with the side chaining, you know, just using your auxes and stuff. So I'm, you know, Bobby's definitely taught me a lot. I am a believer of following the analog,
analog path.
You know, I was at a round table at GDC and we had an interesting question, and one of the comments I put out, which I do believe, because, you know, I think we've all been around long enough. We've been through multiple ages of technology.
Right. Centuries, you could say.
Centuries. And that simply is, think about what you want to create. And what I've told everybody to do is, more than technology, is to listen. To think about what you want to accomplish. Because the gear doesn't really accomplish anything. What you have to do is, so you can go to Pro Tools, Nuendo, Logic, and all these different things. You got to think inside your head, what do I want to create? Then look at the tools and find out what tool is appropriate to create what you're thinking, rather than the other way around, in my opinion.
Right.
You know, whether it's analog, whether it's digital, I want to do this. What does that? A vocoder. Okay, maybe Vocator will do it because it does this cross chaining and blah, 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 blah. So you get to know the tools, but you use your head to figure out what you want to create. And then, do you want LA-2A? Do you want 1176? You know, what kind of microphone do you want? Because you're trying to create a sound.
Right.
And you know what? I know we're getting ready to go to a break.
Okay.
Am I right? Am
you
I
reading are.
Your
you
mind?
You're absolutely
I'm good.
Right. You read my mind.
Well, I read your mind, and also your brother's waving his hands crazily telling us it's time to go to a break. But aside from that, I read your mind. But I'm just going to tease it that after the break, we're talking about analog versus plugins and stuff. After the break, I'm going to tell you about a plugin that I found recently.
Oh, great.
That is the most amazing amp simulator and just modeler of all that stuff that we've ever come across.
Guitar simulator.
Okay.
Guitar, yes.
Let's
and I will tell you.
Can actually afford it.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's price to move.
You know what? I feel like price this is like almost move. Like radio. You just teased something.
I just teased something.
And
with
that. And our next episode.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to listen to Rob's
you know,
new plugin.
We should have Rob have a little keyboard do organ music.
That can be arranged. Right? Depending on how the rest of my career goes.
So we'll see you on the other side. And for those of you, both of you that are watching us on the live stream.
Go Texas!
We're going to mute for about 5 minutes and we'll see you on the other side. Bye.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast, and we are still streaming on Ustream.tv, and this is going to be, we're kind of testing it out right now. We'll have an Audio Nowcast channel probably by the time we podcast the next time. So if you want to join us, we'll put all the information on Facebook. But right now, for the two people that are online watching us...
Yeah. All right, Jason.
Thank you for still being there. Before the break, Rob was about to tell us a really good plugin that he found. Tell us about a really good plugin.
Really? I don't remember that. Did I say that?
No.
Kidding. Yes. I discovered recently the plugins from a company called Softube.
Softube?
Yes. SOFTUBE.com, I believe.
Okay.
Tell us about it.
And what they are, they have a bunch of different plugins that are interesting, but the coolest ones to me, I mean, you can look at their website, and I'm sure you're going online as I discuss this. The coolest ones are the amp simulators for guitar.
Right.
They have different rooms, like a metal room and a, I forget the names, some of the other rooms they have.
Amp room, metal room.
Yeah, those are the ones. Vintage room, I think, is one of them.
Yeah.
And basically, they have different amps set up in these rooms. And in the user interface, you see these different amps, and you can move around the room, and you can actually pick up the mics and reposition the mics around the speakers.
Oh, that's crazy.
And put them in position.
That is crazy.
That is crazy.
In real time, you actually hear the sound that the mic would make moving around the speaker. You hear the phasing get manipulated.
Really?
And you can position the mic anywhere you want around
the
speakers.
Is this RTAS, VST, TDM?
We're using it on Pro Tools. I think it's all the different plug-in platforms.
Wow, SoftTube?
Yeah. It's worth checking out. The stuff. The most important thing is, though, it sounds amazing. I mean, and you'll see a little quote from me up there on their website eventually, I think, because I sent them an email saying this stuff's just amazing. But the sound quality is incredible.
It competes Waves and Native Instruments.
I mean, I'm friends with all these companies. I'd have to say it's
on par.
I think it's probably the best sounding simulation I've heard.
I found your quote. It's right here. It says, "It's okay."
Oh yeah, that's not my quote.
Rob Arbiter.
Stuff sounds incredible. I mean, there are it has a little more latency than some of the others, but if you're using it on a system that has latency compensation, you know, that's fine. The main thing is the sound quality is just incredible, and being able to position the mic and freely pick it up and move it around
is really cool. But if you're playing guitar through it, and you're
It's on the edge. I will say this. If you're going to play guitar through it, it is a little bit – there is some latency, but it's not enough that it would be distracting for most players, I think. But the main thing is if you're using it in a mix, you know, a lot of times now when we track guitar, we'll track an amped signal as well as a direct. We use the Little Labs box that gives you a really nice clean split of the guitar so you can reamp it later.
Mm-hmm.
And
But you need to reamp it since you already got the plugins?
No, I'm saying what we would do is take the clean signal and do a virtual reamp, because this thing really does sound like an amp, and you can, while your mix is playing, you know, in the old days, an engineer would just tell his assistant to go stand in the room and move the mic around the speaker until they found a sweet spot.
Right.
Now, in this age of laziness and convenience,
you are not kidding.
So
now,
you just pick up with your mouse, move the speaker around.
The entry-level job of that poor schmuck that's got to walk around.
Now he's got to pick up a mouse and click on the plug and move it. But it really sounds like what you would
lost
now,
to virtual, man.
You know, every now and then a plugin comes along where it sounds like what you think it should sound like. You know it's a very complicated plugin. You know there's a ton of math, a ton of complex design. But the basic bottom line is it sounds exactly like what you would hope it sounds like, and that's what this stuff does.
It's good timing because I've just did a rock track, and I need to reamp a bunch of guitar tracks. I'll do it.
For $400 an hour, I'll do it for you.
Say one for the Porsche mouse.
Is that how much that's for the mouse click?
No, I mean, you should try this stuff. And,
really? Are they got demos online, or?
I don't know.
And it's not piratable.
Check YouTube. It might be something up by now.
It's probably I don't know.
No. I did have the website right.
You know what it says? How to buy or try. So obviously there's some kind.
And it is softtube.com, right?
Yeah. It's softtube.se.
Oh, from Sweden.
So
you know what I might do? I might pop around to you and do a quick reamp at your place.
You're all welcome to check it out. You're all welcome to check it out.
Hey, by the way, speaking of sessions, you and Forrest did a session. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Dude, I just want to say, starting off, Bobby Summerfield.
He's a monster, isn't he?
He's a monster producer, and he has to be. It was one of the most enjoyable recording experiences yet for me. Brilliant artist, brilliant songwriter, and just a golden attitude.
Thank you. It's very.
Yes. Yeah.
You sure that it's me doing it? Hang on.
Tricks in the mail, brother.
Tell us a little bit about the session. Tell us a little bit about the session. What you recorded and how you recorded.
You go for Forrest. I mean,
well,
he played. I didn't. All I said was rolling.
Yeah. The
But what you know? Let's start with the drum set and the mics, the whole thing.
Okay. Well, the kit that I used was my Gretsch Renown Maple kit. I used a 20-inch kick drum and basically fusion-sized drums, 10-12 rack, 10 and 12 rack toms, and 14-inch floor tom.
Right.
And used, you know, Sabian cymbals. I'm a Sabian and Gretsch, Gibraltar, Toca, and Dorsey. And I used, an array of, like, you know, Sabian cymbals, you know, Ride, Two Crash, A Splash, One China. Because Bobby was, I felt creatively unfettered with Bobby. He was like, bring the China. Oh, yeah, play the
rock track. You know what I'm saying?
And the cool thing was he gave me these two songs. He was like, oh, you know, don't mind my voice. And, you know, I just threw these together. And one's a rocker, one's a ballad. Man, they both killed.
Yeah, he's being very kind.
The tracks are awesome, and even his scratch vocals, I got it. I was like, oh yeah, man, dude. I mean, dynamically, it gave me more than everything I needed, and it felt like I was in with the band. It was awesome.
Thank you. He's being very kind.
And therefore, Australia.
The first part, he was saying I'm brilliant. He was right there. But when he said the vocals were good, that's when he started lying.
It gave me what I needed, man. I got it. You know.
So how did you mic his drums?
I didn't. Did I mic him? No. Andrew Shepset helped me out, actually. I wanted to try the sub kick in front of the kick drum. I normally mic the kick. I'm an old guy. I mic the kick traditional kind of way. Normally,
which I'm glad you did.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's kind of sound. You used the sub kick?
I did. I printed three tracks for kick drum, which was the internal, you know, a mic inside the kick, standalone thing, FET 47 on the front. And then I used a sub bass in front, which was...
That's the Yamaha, right?
Exactly. It's the Yamaha. And Andrew was very kind to lend it to me. It's actually great. It does a nice thing. It does a nice thing. I sometimes get the same effect with other things, but I liked what it did. To tell the truth, I most probably will use it in the mix. If for nothing else, I'll use it to fill in some of the.
I was just going to ask, what does it do?
It's essentially a speaker. It adds low end.
Low end magnet.
it's essentially like an NS10 speaker mounted inside a 8-inch snare drum looking stand, exactly what it is. And what happens is the person kicks the kick drum, and of course it makes the air displacement makes the speaker move and generates electricity and you record it.
How sensitive is it towards any kind of wind or movement? If you like put your hand across it, will you hear?
No, it's not that sensitive.
It needs a bit of a kick.
It needs a bit of a kick. But I will say you don't put it in front of the hole. I mean, I the front skin on Forrest's kit had a big old five inch hole in the front. So obviously air was blowing out there. I didn't put it there, or I wouldn't put any mic there.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So of course I set it off. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was pretty cool. It had like a plastic skin on it. No, like a nylon skin.
It's a mesh.
It's like a mesh, mm-hmm. right? And it had tuning lugs on it. And I don't think it was for any other reason other than looking good.
Is
that what it is? Okay. Because mm-hmm. I thought design. If I had some time, I mean, we literally with the drums, we did the drum sounds in about 8-10 minutes. We just set up and go.
The other brilliant thing, too, is, you know, when you're used to going and doing sessions, and man, Lord Jesus, the drum sessions, oh my gosh, it's like 2 to 3 hours for drum sounds. Like, by the time the session starts, you're already kind of like this.
Let me ask this. In orchestral, would you ever use it for timpany? Use it for timpany? Not instead of. Mm-hmm. In other words, to get. Because there's a reason.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So what's happening is you get giant bass drums.
It's just at low end.
In other words, you got your high end mics, mm-hmm. but to get that.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Whether it's Kodo drums, whether it's timpani, in addition to it, because the reason why I'm thinking is, can I use it for guns?
Yeah. You probably can.
So if I put it for guns and I want the low,
you probably will.
I think it's better for things that have more of a concussion like that.
Hmm. But there's some
low frequency stuff.
Timpani does, bass drums do, orchestral drums.
So that VO session, it won't make me sound like a, you know. Burly.
Possibly not.
Like Bluto.
That's right.
But then always asking if you took it outside and just be outside air movement, would you just...
No, because it's a speaker. It's not very sensitive. It doesn't have high.
So it wants to be pushed.
It wants to be pushed. Yeah, for your PZM, for your timps, because they're such big drums. Most of them are quite big drums, and so taikos. Mm-hmm. They take quite a time for the sound, the length of the sound to obviously develop. PZM. I'm sure you've experimented, but if you put up a couple of big old 8 or 10 or 12 foot gobos around them and put two PZMs on there and put a center focus, it'll be very
probably
sexy.
Would.
Huh. Be very sexy.
Now we've got the microphones. How many mics did you use on like the snare and the kick and the overheads?
I did really basic stuff. I did.
You doubled on the snare, right?
I did two on the snare, one on the hat, one on each tom. It was just a real simple straight ahead standard thing. I did four in the room and two overheads.
In the room.
Oh, and I put a ribbon, above his head.
Yeah, you sure did.
Which I used
directly above 421s? My head.
On the two high toms, 57s, on 421 on the low one. Right. Old school. Just old fashioned.
I was about to say give a shout out to his room. Hey, room. I must say that really the coup de grace was that daggum room of his. I mean, the drums, yeah, I thought I was like Tommy Aldridge or Bonham or somebody in that magical room.
It's proportions we were talking about there.
It shall be officially dubbed the magical.
So you get that 70 hertz boost.
Exactly.
When you record it.
And you cue it out with VST. It was really good. And needless to say, Forrest is saying all, and I'm not just saying this because you said it, but he smoked. He played really well to a click, solidly just locked in, 1, 2, 3,
thank
bang.
You.
You did. Oh, you smoked it, smoked it, did exactly. And I said, change a couple of things. He changed it. We put. Like two changes, right? That was it. And we were done. We took 5 hours to do two drum sessions because we spoke for 3 hours.
We talked about Ronaldinho.
Ronaldinho, we were talking about all sorts of stuff. We had lunch, it was fun. Yeah, we did a great. It was really fun.
That's
fun.
Good.
I'll post it, actually. We'll post the drum track.
Yeah.
That'd be wicked.
I'd love to hear it, and we can put a link to it on the website, and that way we can watch it.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Opportunity.
Well, hey, listen, guys, on the last podcast, we had Jason from South Carolina. He sent an email in to ask us a question, and we ran out of time on the last podcast. And even before we do that, actually, we have Jason Moon from London didn't get our shout out.
What's up, Jason? What's up, Giza?
So we know we're going to give a shout out to Jason Moon in London.
And then we'll just call
the other Jason from South Carolina.
What's up, Geese?
So are you allowed to listen to the show if your name's not Jason?
Apparently, we have a lot of Jasons.
Jason from Kakalaka.
But what he.
What's that scary movie, Jason? Was he
Friday
the 13th. Hey, I wonder. But the question that he wanted to ask is basically he asked how to put he said some humanity because we were talking about humanity.
So about duct tape.
but he asked how to put some humanity back into his music, specifically how to do it through his producing or through mixing, and he wanted to know if we had any tips. So it sounds like
call real musicians.
Well, it sounds like he probably has already recorded a track and just wants to know if we do anything technique wise to give a little human feel in the mixing or the producing.
I'll start if you want.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Hey, Jason. From your question, I'm gathering he's asking. On the mix side of things and the production side of things, there's obviously, if you want to put a human life feel into something, obviously record great musicians at whatever. But from a mix point of view, just from a mixing point of view, instead of using, I'm sure you're using a DAW or some kind of electronic computer system for mixing, why don't you do it like the old boys used to do, where you'd mix a part by hand pretty much, then edit it, print it, then move on and mix another section. And instead of copying and pasting your automation, like the chorus being all the same volume and the vocals all coming in perfectly, it's nice to have everything consistent, but there's something to hearing a spontaneous jazz player play on the edge of their instrument and nearly fall off the chair. And they take you generally on that journey where you go, oh, is he going to hit the wrong note? Is he going to do this? And it's a lovely live thing. I think that's what you're asking for. When you hear a good mix from the old days, and I'm talking about the old days, sort of like the 70s through the 80s sort of thing, like the Queens, the ELOs, which were massive mixes for those days. It really challenged the mixers in those days. And the only way they really could do it was have the engineer, the coffee boy, everybody was had a hand on one of the sliders, controlling the volume, and it was a live performance. And it had a bit of a soul. And as the night would wear on, you'd most probably push your slider a bit too much or hit the reverb too hard. You'd start to get this performance, and sometimes you'd get a magical thing and sometimes you wouldn't. But either way, you'd put all these little bits down and you'd edit them together at the end of it and make yourself a mix. I like that kind of mixing. As a matter of fact, I still mix like that when I'm not mixing for television.
And so humanization is imperfection.
Now, except for us, all of us here, we are perfect. Yes.
You know what I found amazing, especially when you're talking, is really when you, I started off as a mouse mixer and I could mix with a mouse really fast, really quick, mainly because I was doing post-production. So I could mix ahead of picture and it was just a great way to get stuff done really fast. But the problem with mixing with a mouse is you don't, do fader moves, like everything is kind of flatlined. You have your faders and they're kind of okay, here we're going to keep the music at this one level, this level, and, you know, you draw a little dip for, you know, when the dialogue comes in or whatever. But it's not organic, whereas when once I started to grab faders, you kind of like, you ride the music. You have a little bit more emotion. And I think you can really hear that, especially in music, maybe not necessarily on some of the post stuff that I was doing before, but as for music, you know, it's those little subtle things. I was sitting in on a session with Martin Page, and Mike Schiff was mixing a song that Martin had wrote, and it was really amazing to watch Martin produce and talk to Mike, because he would do things like little subtle things like push a tambourine or push a shaker at certain parts of the song, and even though that shaker wasn't necessarily the main focus of the whole piece, mm-hmm. it was just back there, just enough that during a certain moment of the song, all of a sudden it's just a little bit out front, and it really made a difference on the feel of the whole thing.
Made it more dramatic.
Yeah,
that, huh?
and that's, you know, that's what they call it, mixing.
Yeah, right. I think
what a concept.
I mean, I do believe mixing, whether it's records or even post production, needs to weave. And set and forget.
Yeah.
Doesn't work, and I'm actually finished with this movie called Citizen Game that comes out for Labor Day, and it's all about weaving, and there's no one sound that sits dominant for really any length of time. And one of the things, I mean, God, when we used to work together years ago, I had a waveframe sampler.
Right.
And when I did, let's say, a movie like Cliffhanger, the helicopters,
right.
there were a series of loops. Mm-hmm. That's all it was. And they were only like 10 seconds through most of the show. But I would sit there and ride volume, ride EQ.
You did Cliffhanger?
Cliffhanger, yeah.
I love the sound of that.
Yeah, so and it was a combination of me playing loops and, believe it or not, octopads.
Really? What about that?
That was in the 90s or something?
Some of that. And then what I did with the helicopters was me, because what happened was Rennie on the picture was doing all these speed variations.
Right.
So, and I couldn't go, pop. So what I would do, it was too hard. I had to play it. So I played it in combination of loops. But the point is not that. The point is you have to keep changing it up. You can grab several loops. It's the same thing that we're doing with a lot of the loop style editors and DAWs.
Right.
You know, whether it's Ableton or something else. What you do is you mix it in, you mix it back. You take different frequencies and you blend them in. And you can take, you know, 5-6 loops, whether it be music or design, put them together. But it's how you use it, how you mix it, how you humanize it.
Now, let me ask you a really quick question. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
Well, I was going to steer it in a slightly different direction with the humanizing. So if you have more on
Let me just ask one quick question, and we'll get back to that. Cliffhanger, when the ladder starts coming out of the
Yeah.
What was that?
It's a combination of Bullet Rickos and I mean, everything that we created, because I know exactly the scene you're talking about.
Because it sounded great. I remember that. I saw it in a really great theater, and I was blown away by the sound. Wow, that's amazing. It's a small world, huh?
Yeah. Tiny.
It was Rickos and
It's metal, grabbing stuff from Foley, hitting things.
I gotcha.
A lot of sounds reversed.
Yeah, because it had that little.
It felt like those bolts were zipping by.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that was really good. Okay, well, I'll have to talk later. Go ahead, Rob. Get us back on track.
I was going to say just one other thing about bringing humanity to track. Sometimes that translates to a lot of times these days things are recorded too clean and too direct. You know, there's not a lot of slop on the tracks and not a lot of room on some things. And slop can be a really cool thing. And one thing that can take a track that's maybe a little too sterile,
right.
And I don't know if it's adding humanity, but it might add just a pleasant realism to it, is take a few of the tracks, run them through speakers, and re-mic them in a room. It's something we've done for a long time. But, like, we've done it with drums, we've done it with guitar, we've done it with bass. And it's amazing how much just playing a guitar through a loud amp,
right,
in a room and re-miking it can just bring new life to it.
And that's
actually,
I
was going to say the coolest example of that we've ever done, I think, is it's going back to 94 now. It was the 25th anniversary of Woodstock, and we remixed a Woodstock for the box set of CDs. And a lot of the guitar performances, you know, we had all the original master tapes. So we would take, you know, a Hendrix guitar or, you know, there's so many amazing performances there. And the stuff was recorded on 1-inch 8-track, But the guitars were recorded separately, so we could take those guitars, run them through a Marshall stack or whatever, and then crank it and re-mic it. And it's the same performance, it's the same basic sound, but all of a sudden, you're there. All of a sudden, it's just live again. And that was an amazing experience. But we've done it a ton. Actually, with Stevie, we've done it with drums, where we'll take a stereo recording of a kit, play it really loud in the studio, mic it in a great room, and then re-record it, including drum machine stuff. You could take drum machines and re-mic them. You know, it makes a big difference.
Worldizing is cool because I did a Coke commercial years ago where it was different instruments of an orchestra were playing in different places in Manhattan. So you see someone playing a cello and some playing a violin, and they recorded all the musicians in a studio separately.
Right.
So they put it in, they tried to add some reverb to it, and it didn't work. And they were like, well, do you have any ideas? So I went out to environments that were similar and re-mic'd it and played it back. And I also put it in the stereo image. So at the very end, when they were all playing, I took each instrument individually and placed it in the stereo spectrum based on the video. So when you put it and you combine it back again, it sounded like they were playing in the streets of New York.
Wow.
You know, or subway or wherever, you know.
You know, one tip that I have that I actually learned from Martin, speaking of Martin Page, who's not here, but we got to get him back. In his arrangements, if you listen to some of his mid-tempo stuff, he always has in the background something that's kind of pushing the rhythm a little bit, whether it's a shaker or maybe it's a bass drum that's hitting
a little ahead or something.
Yeah, well, just basically just kind of pushes like a boom, 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 or a little and it really kind of adds this little like metronome clock thing that kind of pushes the groove a little bit, and it's never really up in the mix, and it's not, you know, it's not obnoxious, but I just found like when I'm working on my own music and I need to get some kind of glue to hold the whole rhythm together, if a little something in the background just kind of pushing ahead really kind of helps glue it together, and it doesn't have to stick out, it's just subtle enough to really I don't know. It just brings it all together. It really, you know, you can sense a good, like, percussionist, you know, keeping
it
together.
I do sometimes quite a lot, actually. I have a white noise track in it on literally just a recording of, that's all it is. And I put it through a low pass or a filter, at least. Sometimes I take the top end off, sometimes I don't. But either way, and then I put it into a double delay, an 1/8-16th in time with the music, and then into a reverb. So it's telescope. So you got white noise, which is really off the stereo bus, it's pretty much you don't really hear it, and then that goes to a delay, which then goes off to a reverb, and it's just generally stereo, but the delay is closed in, and then I'll just ride it up a little bit, and then ride it back down. And why the delays are on there is because as I go up, the volume's increasing, so it's getting louder, louder, louder. But when I come down, the volume comes down, but the delays are still doing this, so you start to get this thing going on.
Oh, See, that's where you're a genius.
So you just do it in the chorus. Like, if you've got a chorus, and you've got, like, the third chorus. I'm talking about, and this is for pop, you know, because I like pop music. But if you've got a pop music and you, well, whatever it is, let's just say it's a cheesy old pop song where everybody's singing in the chorus in three-part or two-part or units or whatever. But you put that in when they go la-di-da-da, da-di-da-da, la-di-da-da, you'll end up going, making the track sound quite massive when the chorus comes in. So much so that when you go back to the B section, you go back to the verse, and that stops and all that reverb disappears, you go, what happened?
It's all wet. What in the world made you think
that's cool
that way?
Like what, I did a lot happened? Of drugs when I was a kid.
You hanging out with Chip Barrett, man?
No, you know.
That's genius, dude.
No, man. It's a common trick that people use. There's nothing I can say I come up with. But,
oh, okay.
There's a lot of people.
I believe just, you, man. I believe definitely. You.
Well, Jason, I hope that helped you out with some of those tips and trying to put a little humanity back into your music, because Lord knows there's a lot of music out there that's soulless right now. but we're going to be wrapping it up. This is kind of fun. I like the whole live stream thing, you know. I think that's going to be kind of fun. And when we go live,
it's a way of us feeling even more awkward.
Oh, no.
We should all do this.
We are cyber. And
unless you're seeing this on the stream, you don't know what's going on.
But, well, not all of us are losing.
But we'll have more information when we get that up and running, and we're going to do it a lot better than we're doing it right now. Rob, you working on anything that you can talk about?
Been working on a few things. Actually, yeah, there's a lot going on right now. But
that's good.
Well, two of the main things, for months I've been working on a new non-visual computer setup for Stevie, and I think I talked about that
right.
a few weeks ago, I was getting it to AppleScript. I showed some of it to Bobby, and I'm happy to say that version 1.0 of that is basically done, and I'm showing it to Stevie, and we're going to start making changes. But I think it's probably the coolest piece of non-visual – well, it's definitely the coolest piece of non-visual software I've ever worked on, and it's a pretty amazing music app. He can basically do anything with it, and that's just been a huge project. It's thousands of lines of code, and I've been on it for months, but it feels good to finally have that almost done, at least the first version of 50 is almost done. Still working on a lot of music. Actually, the Orbit Monkey album is up on iTunes, so both of you out there can go check that out. Oh, and I brought we're streaming a picture. I just finished the graphic work for the album cover, so I brought it to show the boys. But that album is finally done, and we have one more that's on its way to iTunes, and I'll announce once it gets there. And then we have another album we're going to start recording in the next couple weeks. So a lot of music coming out and a lot of stuff I'll be able to talk about.
Forrest, what about you? You were on TV over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
The morning show.
We did the CBS morning show with Utada Hikaru from actually New York City and Tokyo, Japan. Great artist, lovely person. She and her father both are like two of the best people I've been blessed to work with in this business yet. And it's cool too because she's had a career going since she was, I don't know, like 16 or something. She sold like 52 million records thus far worldwide. Wow. And so we did CBS Morning in reverse chronological order, CBS Morning on Saturday. Then I think like Wednesday we were on, you know, Good Day LA, which was local. But then on Tuesday of last week we were on Ryan Seacrest's like radio show. But I believe it's, you can probably find that online from what I hear. There were cameras in.
Yeah, syndicated.
Yeah, so it's really good with that. And just really trying to write more music and go full force and focus on that. And as you guys touched on earlier about the whole, you know, oh, you're probably not young enough to relate to the young artist thing, I want to say you have to be careful in this business because folks, I don't know what it is about in this day and age or just this town, but people are afraid of age for some reason, and they're trying to push you to your grave when you're not nearly far enough.
Man, after 35, just, you know, you're done.
You just have, or after 19. I mean, so, yeah, just trying to screw all that, man. I know God gave me gifts, and I love music, and I love music first, so I'm freaking doing it. It's pretty
mostly. Yeah. Hey, dude. You've got the hair, so you won't have any problems. Scott!
Extra hair on him. I was hanging over here, you know.
Hey, I saw the ads for Crank, the movie Crank.
Yeah, they're advertising
Crank,
that like crazy.
High voltage.
That is, what a crazy, crazy premise for a movie, man.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie.
Is it? I can't wait to see it.
It's Looney Tunes for adults.
Is it? It looks just massive and all the, just chaotic and loud and when the guy, just takes those
it's
battery
leads. It's a family movie. It's bring a date, and you bring the 5-year-old.
It's the feel good movie of the
summer. it's violent. It's sexual. It's a hoot. You know. It's.
I mean, the premise is he has this artificial heart, and every hour he has to throw some voltage.
The base. Could I say? Basically, what the concept is he has an artificial heart. The battery's going down, and he needs to keep recharging it.
Okay.
So imagine every way you can create electricity. And just one of the key words is friction. No. So friction is rubbing against things. Just go from there.
Yeah. Use your imagination.
And anything electrical, light sockets, electrical poles, anything that's like batteries, tasers, it's all there. It's a wild ride.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and then we'll have to talk about some of the sound design because I'm sure you had a good time on that.
It was. I mean, it was all supporting the action comedy for what it was, and I think I think it was good. I think we did some cool stuff. I think with the same directors, we did a movie called Citizen Game, which comes out in Labor Day.
Right.
And that one is – I'm pretty proud of. That's crazy. I mean, that is – there's no way to go to a mix and figure that out. It has to be designed beforehand.
Wow.
And it reminds me of a combination of snowboarding and skating, because you'll go down a second, you'll stop the music, you'll go to silence, you'll have a sound that wrap around the room, you hit them with a low end, and then you keep on going.
Wow.
And it never stays the same, ever.
Wow.
So sonically, it's like going through a motif of like a montage. As visually it's cut, very, very cutty,
mm-hmm.
The sound is just as cutty. And it's really interesting mix.
Must be fun for you to do that.
Oh, it was fun. I mean, and it was very punk, and it was like, you know, one point people said, hey, you know, are we getting too aggressive? Are we going to offend people? And we're like, look, it's this kind of movie. You know, if you do look for a Disney movie, this is not your movie. But we wanted to make it loud. And on Crank, Mike Patton from Faith No More did the music. And it was great. And you know, for me, I ended up contributing quite a bit to the music, and it had to rock. I mean, the whole point was I didn't want it to be, you know, hey, it's a film, and right. It's over there.
Right.
I wanted to be, and I wanted the guitars, and all of a sudden I'm putting guitars in the back, and I'm moving the stuff around, and I said, no, we got the sub and the bass, put it in the front in the center, and hit the sub, and I went, so it's just rocking the whole time. It's got to, you just want to put your hands up and go, woo!
Right.
Man,
that's awesome.
Well, looking forward to both those. Bobby, are you working on anything?
I am. I'm actually mixing Forrest stuff that he played so well on. I'm going to call him next week to play on another one.
Oh, good.
That's good.
And I'm doing One Life to Live _.
Wow.
So that's what I'm going to be doing.
Nice.
Tomorrow, definitely. Well, I should have done it today, but tomorrow, definitely.
That's great. That is
Mike,
great.
What are you up to?
Well, let's see. Next week, I'm going to be in New York. That'll be kind of fun. And
gonna eat a lot.
And I'm gonna do the whole New York thing. And I'm going to the Met on Monday.
I love the Met.
Gonna see an opera. And
same key.
Hopefully, it won't sound like that.
It was the same key.
It's gonna be, it's gonna be Wagner's Valkyrie, and it's 5 hours long.
Oh, you're gonna love it.
Oh no, you serious?
Yeah, but he's gonna be sitting on his iPod.
No,
yeah,
you know what? It's staged by the Met, and the Met just does some phenomenal staging. So I'm actually looking forward to it. I've never been.
5 hours though.
Yeah, 5 hours is 5 hours. Yeah. I mean, it's.
But apparently, you know, it's going to be an event. It's going to be a big deal.
It's
so.
A big deal.
So we'll see. Wow. And I found out that they don't, you know, the Met, there's no PA in the Met. So it's going to be really interesting to hear about the acoustics. And opera is probably...
So there's no plugins?
Yeah, exactly. I know the least about opera than any other style of music, you know. So it's going to be really interesting experience.
So I wish I have is a little digicam. You'll be watching it and seeing your expression. You 3 hours go by, you're like this. 4 hours by this.
I'm you sure. Know, you know what?
If there's any way to find a 5 hour video of Mike watching opera, that sounds just fascinating.
You
got a high speed of that.
Okay, now whose idea was to see the opera? Your wife's?
I got invited by some friends because we're
and they are your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Valkyrie.
Hey, you know what? This is going to be exactly
for 5 hours.
This is going to be to see an opera at the Met. I mean, it's like it's the top. It's not like I'm going to La Mirada Civic, you know. And sitting there.
Of course, there's nothing wrong with La Mirada.
But anyhow, so that's what I'm going to be doing. So it'll be fun.
Good cover.
First, I'm saying you can see the Mets.
No, that's different.
No, that's that would be worse.
Wouldn't that be funny? Going to the Met, you get dressed up, and I'm the baseball star. Oh, Mets, kind of not Met.
All right. Well, hey, I just want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. And if you have any questions that you want to get to us, you can reach us on our Facebook page, and you'll find the link up on our on our website at audionowcast.com. That's audionowcast.com. Also, you can also send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. I've been filtering out the spam, so I'm going to open that one back up.
All right. That is our MySpace stuff.
But apparently, I've got a lot of money in Nigeria waiting for me. Before we go, I want to thank my brother Ben for handling the Facebook. And also, he's doing the camera for our test of the Ustream.tv. And
is our MySpace still up, too, by the way?
Our MySpace is still up at myspace.com/audionowcast. But MySpace is just, it's just taking a hit.
So on Facebook, have we sent people guitars and what
We haven't done any of that. And Facebook, you can talk
anybody
to us.
Anybody twittering? What about the Twitteration?
No, haven't started Twittering. Not Twittering.
Got to get into the Twitter action.
Yeah,
another thing to waste hours.
I know. I have no time to Twitter.
What is YouTube? That's my favorite. I like
YouTube.
So now walking down the hallway. Now I'm in the restroom. Now I'm back in the hallway.
Exactly.
Now I'm on Twitter. It's like way more than I want to know.
Yeah, it's the Twitter. To me, it's like I don't care if they're trying to figure out what they want for breakfast.
It's not interesting.
Too many government officials are on Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to.
That interesting?
You know what? I've seen a couple. I've only seen maybe one or two that looked kind of cool. And one was Imogen Heap.
Okay.
She was recording her new album, and her little Twitters were like, you know, having a hard time with the chorus on this song, and they step out for a little bit. So, and it was kind of cool because you kind of see how the creative process as she's playing
the drums. I'm playing the drums.
But besides that, it's like,
if the Twitter is something like having a hard time coming up with the chorus for the song, maybe you should just get off the computer and work on the song.
Well,
what we should be doing.
We're not
have no
Twitter.
Clue. Have to deliver it in 22 minutes' time.
Right. Hey, I also want to give a shout out to Mike Stitz, who was on the other side of the live stream this whole time.
Mike!
Is he still there?
He's still there.
Can we tell?
Oh, Mike!
Yes. Oh, Mike, go to bed.
He's in Texas.
No, definitely go to bed.
He's in bed.
So he listened to the whole thing.
Don't you have a Yamaha DP7 to send him?
No, that's a different guy.
Oh.
Mike, thank you for giving us the feedback. The good thing about the Ustream TV is that you'll also be able to send us some messages during the show.
So can you stream us? Can we see?
Can we see them?
We should do like iChat, you know?
The thing about Ustream, though, is you can have like 100 people watching, or 500 people, or wow. Two.
Yeah, or two. But that's pretty cool.
So it's pretty cool. So we're going to get this up and running so that we'll open it up to everybody on the podcast.
And how will they find out about it? On Facebook?
It's going to be on Facebook. We'll put all the information on Facebook and probably MySpace, too. But I just want to thank everybody for listening. And like I said, join us on the Facebook page. You can join our page. And if you have any questions, you can email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com, audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And from the guys and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.